Greetings once again to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording in the early hours of the morning, November 10th, 2013. This is Nav Briefing 90, and the title is Course Correction for the Navigator. It's good to be back with you all. It's been a considerable lapse of time since my last briefing in the very beginning of October, so we're running on a month and a half or 6 weeks here since I posted a briefing. I certainly didn't intend that to happen. I didn't intend it that way, but it just turned out that way. And in the course of this briefing, I might be able to tell you a little bit about what's happening and describe to you some of the factors that brought about this lapse of communication, as it were. First off, though, coming right out of the gate, I want to say that the title of NB90 is not the return of the sacred masculine, as I promised. Now, I will talk about the return of the sacred masculine in this briefing and in the next few, probably. But I'm not dedicating that title to any briefing. The truth is, I already did 4 recordings entitled The Return of the Sacred Masculine. I did them throughout the month of October, this past month, when you haven't heard from me. I'm not posting any of those. It was difficult for me to make those recordings. Eventually, I had to conclude that I don't really want to talk about the sacred masculine, which may seem odd or even perverse to some of you. But you know, I'm an honest guy, so I'll tell you exactly where I'm at. And I don't really want to talk about it. It's a subject that bothers me a lot. And it's not just because of concern that I would treat the subject in a skillful manner. I think I can probably do that. In fact, I am going to talk about it. See what a contradictory creature I am. I just have to overcome a huge resistance in order to talk about it. There is something about what I can say about the sacred masculine and my discovery of the key principle for defining the sacred masculine. There is just something about all that I can barely squeeze out of myself. For whatever reason, you draw your own conclusions. I'd also like to note before I begin that during the past month of October, I had occasion to go back and listen to a couple of briefings in the past. I wanted to go back and listen to the 2 briefings regarding Kamala, because we are currently in a Kamala shift. I saw this Kamala shift coming up, and so I had the desire to go and see what I had said. And I don't know where those briefings are. You know, I can't keep track of anything that I do, honestly. If I stop and try to keep track of what I'm doing, I lose the current of what I'm doing. The velocity that I'm operating on is quite demanding. Oddly, you might not get that impression because I don't always speak rapidly, do I? And sometimes I speak hesitantly and even awkwardly. I was appalled, by the way, when I went back to nav briefing number 77, the syntax of her dreaming. I just picked that briefing out for some reason. That's where I talked about mirrors and the exercises with mirrors, including the exercise to flex the third attention. So nav briefing 77, the syntax of her dreaming, concludes with a description of how to do this exercise with the posing mirror and the holding mirror. But they are not mirrors, they are two different situations, two different moments that mirror each other. I ask you to recall that the characteristic of the third attention is that it is the mirroring attention, but it does not behave in the way of ordinary mirroring in the physical world. The property of ordinary mirroring is that you have an object, such as yourself, standing in front of the bathroom mirror, and then in the mirror you have an image which corresponds to the object. So the characteristic of ordinary mirroring is likeness of appearance. The mirroring attention operates with a different dynamic. It does not involve reproductions or mimesis or the likeness of appearances. It rather involves two moments in time and two situations in those moments that mirror each other. It's about mirroring moments and not about mirroring objects. Anyway, I was appalled by the last 20 minutes of NB77 in the way that I presented that exercise with the third attention. That was so slow and tedious and boring and repetitive. And as I was listening to it, I was asking myself, you know, what the fuck is going on with me at that moment? And all I can say is, I hope I don't present anything like that again in that style, because I found it really difficult to listen to. And all I can say is that happened because I was struggling against an enormous sense of reticence and reservation. I can't say why it's part of my life as a Nahual, but there are certain things that I can talk about as a Nahual, secrets of the practices of Gayan sorcery, and I can talk about them and explain them and teach them, but I do so against a kind of restraint, and I don't know why that happens, but I felt extremely restrained in explaining that exercise, and that accounts for the tedious repetition of my delivery. So coming back to the present moment, I have to say that I feel a similar kind of restraint in talking about the sacred masculine, weird as that seems. But I'll see if I can squeeze it out of myself at some point here. Just to update you on the real-time factors of this briefing, today is the 10th of November, a Sunday. It is the seventh day of the shift of Kamala that began on the 4th. And there was a beautiful configuration in the sky on the 7th, on the 6th of, excuse me, the 6th of November. There was a beautiful configuration of the crescent moon in the Scorpion conjunct Antares, and upward to the left of the moon was Venus in the constellation of the Archer. And that was the signal omen for the Kamala shift. That is how I identified the shift as belonging to Kamala. So as I said, I saw that coming and I went back and I looked at those two NAB briefings, where I talked about Kamala at some length. One of them is called Kamala's Wedding. I don't know what numbers they are because I don't have a list of briefings. Because I haven't made a list of briefings. I guess I could go look on Gaiaspora, couldn't I? Well, I'll do that.
To give you some idea of where the nav is at lately, I can tell you that for me to go to the computer and go to the website and click and scroll and find these briefings is just about at the limit of my capacity with IT and computers. So I've been struggling lately with a growing revulsion, plus a complete lack of patience. I have no patience left for anything, especially if it has to do with computers. So it makes it a little difficult for me to get back into the mode where I can be at my outpost and deliver these briefings. But anyway, here I am recording on one computer and looking at the screen on another. And it says, the engendering gaze, nav briefing 35, 25th of November, 2012, and Kamala's wedding 30 of November, 2012. So it would be nav briefings 35 and 36 that are relevant to the current shift. Now, I'd be grateful if you'd bear with me as I get off to a rather shaky start here, picking up the briefings after this unanticipated lapse. I don't really know where to start or where to pick up the themes or questions that have been floating in your minds over the past couple of months. I'm also shaky because just about an hour ago at 6:10, there was a terrific earthquake here at the southern tip of Spain. The place where I live is about 30 miles as the crow flies from the Straits of Gibraltar. So I can look down and see the straits. I can see the water. I can see massive tankers in the straits. And beyond Gibraltar, I can often see to the other side of the straits, the coast of Morocco and the mountains of Africa, the Rif and Atlas Mountains. There is a tectonic plate, a major tectonic plate that runs right through the straits, and it is the Euro-African plate. I understand it's a fairly shallow plate, and it's subject to enormous subduction pressures. As you can imagine, it has the weight of the continent of Africa on it, on one side, and the weight mainly of the Iberian Peninsula, extending from the Pyrenees southward on the other side. So that was the plate that caused the Lisbon earthquake back at the beginning of the 20th century, was it? That killed 30,000 people. It was the quake that caused the Malaga earthquake that Picasso experienced when he was 5 years old, and which, according to Alice Miller, inspired him to do the Guernica painting, which is generally interpreted as a war scene of depicting the devastation of the Spanish village of Guernica. But Alice Miller says it is a memory of the earthquake. Here in the local town, they haven't had any earthquakes for a long time, and tremors and earthquakes are rare. In fact, in the 12 years that I've been coming here off and on, I've never experienced one until this morning at 6:10 and exactly. I was downstairs in the bathtub at that time, as it happens. And sometimes when I'm taking a bath to soak my bones in mineral salts and Epsom salts, subjects come up and points to find themselves in my mind, which I later present in NAV briefings. And I was actually, you could say it's a kind of bathtub meditation that I do, right? And I happened to be at that moment at 6:10 in the morning in the very pitch of a rather deep meditation about what's been happening to me over the last 6 weeks, about this reticence and reservation that I have, and about what I've been dealing with, if you will, if you want to use that crude language. And I came to the moment in my bathtub meditation when I had an experience that I've had over the years that typically happens in the sorcerer's world. Castaneda described this experience throughout his series of books. It always comes up when Castaneda is in some kind of trouble, when he's overwhelmed, or when he's unable to handle the Nahual, when he's unable to remain impeccable as a sorcerer. And at that moment, Don Juan kindly advises him of the fact that there are moments when a sorcerer must capture the totality of himself or herself. So this theme, the totality of oneself, is a recurrent theme or meme or motif in Castaneda, and it is a genuine factor in the living practice of sorcery as it goes today. This experience of reaching the totality of yourself is gripping. It is something that happens in a kind of convulsion. I would compare it to a kind of convulsion. And this morning, it happened to me in the bathtub at 6:10 a.m., and at exactly the moment it happened, a terrific jolt of seismic energy blasted out of the Gibraltar fault zone. You know, my house faces south, and the lower terrace has two big French doors on it, but they're made of cast iron. This is the case in Spain and all over Europe. The doors and windows of houses are often made of very heavy cast iron. And the jolt that came from the south shook those doors. I thought they were going to blow off. And a few minutes later, I got an email from Jill, who's down at Ambergain House, a.k.a. Kundry, who was woken up by the jolt and sent me a message asking me if I had felt it as well. This is the first time in all the years I've lived here that anything like this has happened. So I guess it's a good omen, and it's a kick in the ass to the navigator to get his act up and running again and to report in to you loyal and genial members of the crew. I can't apologize for leaving you in the lurch. I never intend to do that. And you know that if I don't get to you, there must be a good reason for it. Something must be working on me, big time. That is indeed the case. But I've been holding off and holding off for longer than I care to do so, because I don't really want to tell you what's working on me. I don't want to put it in a briefing. So the best I can do is just kind of sneak it out between the lines. So where do I start? Well, let's start with the title of this briefing, Course Correction for the Navigator. What does this mean? Well, it means two things, my friends. First of all, it means that I'm in a major course correction in my life. Basically, what's happening is that my dual role as the navigator on the one hand and the Nahual of Infinity Ridge on the other hand is undergoing considerable tension. And due to events that began back during the first week of September, I've been plunged deeply into my role as Nahual. And so those concerns have overridden my activity as navigator, and they have impeded upon my ability to do these briefings. Now, the other sense of the course correction I can share with you easily, and I'm grateful to do so. You know, the GNE is an experiment unlike anything else in this world. It's an experiment unlike anything anyone has attempted in our time. It's a telestic experiment conducted in the spirit of the mysteries using the navigational tools that the Teleste themselves used in the past and would be using today if they were around. And as an experiment, there's a certain margin for error. And my course correction that I'm conveying to right now concerns an error that I made some time back. Now, this error went relatively undetected for a while. But for a couple of months now, this error has been really bugging me because it's impeding the development of the narrative. Now, you know, we're not in a stall right now. In the past, I would have dropped off from navigator briefings from time to time when we were in a stall. But we're not in a stall now, are we? We go into a stall in a couple of months. So, what's happening that's affecting my ability to deliver briefings? Well, I felt for a couple of months that the narrative itself is kind of in a stall. You know, the GNE uses the Sophianic vision story as a guiding framework, as does Planetary Tantra. And so we are living this myth. It's a participatory myth. And we are living in the moment of the myth that was not predicted necessarily, but anticipated by the Teleste of the Mysteries, namely the deorthosis or Sophia's correction. So the myth is the guiding framework, the guiding narrative for this experiment, and the myth evolves and develops as the experiment proceeds. But I felt increasingly over the last couple of months that the myth itself was stalled, the narrative was stalled. It wasn't evolving. Somehow it was locked. Now I can identify for you, and you may have had the same impression, two key factors. There are probably others, but there are two key factors that account for the stall in the narrative. The first key factor is, quite simply, the lack of definition of the success of this experiment. What is the objective? What is the point from the perspective of Celete and the Aeon Sophia? What is the point of this experiment? What do they want to see happen that would be considered a success in their terms, or even in our terms, you know? So, I haven't defined that so far, have I? Maybe some of you have defined it. If so, you're doing better than I am. But needless to say, unless we have syntax, unless there is syntax to describe the success of the experiment on her terms, then it's not going to be possible to have a full understanding of what's wrong with the experiment. Of course, living in the experiment, we know that something has gone terribly wrong. It's possible to define those elements more easily than it is to step back and define what the ultimate success of the experiment would be. So the GNE is incomplete in this respect. Possibly, at the conclusion of the GNE, in 5 months' time, those components will be provided. I certainly would like to see that happen. The second factor is due to a presumption I made some time ago. This occurred at the moment of developing FGS 2.0 or FGS 3.0. I can't remember exactly because, as I said, if I stopped to do what it takes to keep track of what I'm doing, I wouldn't be able to continue doing it. So that's very awkward for me, but it's something that I have to live with. So roughly speaking, at some point in the course of the GNE, you will recall that we looked back on that episode in the sacred narrative when the Aeons watched the early experiments with the Anthropos genomic plasm. And at that moment I brought in the comparison to the 9 avatars of Vishnu, and I grafted the Hindu myth of Vishnu onto the Sophianic myth to illustrate what happened at that moment. Was this episode 4 we're talking about? Something like that. You can go look it up. I don't have the patience to go look it up. And so what I said was that the Aeons with Thilite and Sophia at the front of the observation team watched how 9 different planetary experiments with the Anthropos crashed. And I correlated those 9 experiments to the 9 avatars of Vishnu. That's fine. That correlation stands. But what I said precipitously at that moment was incorrect. What I said was that they observed that the 9 crashes occurred because in each case, in each laboratory setting, the Anthropos turned against its environment. Well, that is not correct. I really don't have the grounds for saying that. And so the course correction that I propose to you now, and this is an important one, so pay attention, is simply to leave the question of why those 9 previous experiments failed open. Now we know that in the 10th experiment, in the 10th laboratory setting, with Anthropos 10, that the experiment is at risk of catastrophe because the species has turned against its environment. So that is certainly the case in Anthropos 10. But I cannot say, and ought not to have said, in the first place, that it was the case for Anthropos 1 through 9. So, I ask you to correct that episode of the narrative as you are living the narrative and repeating it and developing it in your own lives and in your own minds. Now, you might ask, is there any way to go and find out why those 9 previous experiments failed? And I would say, yes, there is. First of all, though, I would say that you won't get anywhere, or at least I didn't get anywhere, and I don't see how anyone else could get anywhere, by trying to tease the answers out of the mythology contained in the Hindu material of the 9 avatars of Vishnu. Now, you can go look up the 9 avatars of Vishnu on the internet, and you can read each of those episodes and the different interventions that Vishnu made in his own dream, in the worlds that he was dreaming, and the conditions that required those interventions, because that is recorded in Hindu mythology. In fact, it is what you call a mythological sequence, and it is one of the most famous and well-known sequences in the massive body of Hindu mythology. Well, I myself have looked at those 9 episodes and tried to decipher and decode them to see if I could extract from them anything sensible. If I could extract any intel from them that would show what happened in these 9 previous experiments. And I can't. Maybe someone else can. And so as far as that material is concerned, even though I refer it and graft it into the Sophianic narrative for reference, I don't find that you can draw out of that material any helpful intel. Okay, so how then would someone go about investigating why these 9 previous experiments with other strains of the Anthropos genome failed? Well, quite simply, you have to do that in a telestic practice. These are matters that can only be known in the heightened awareness of cognitive ecstasy, okay? Gnosis is cognitive ecstasy. There are things that you can only know in a state of ecstasy. The condition of ecstatic rapture and immersion in the power of the earth, including the direct beholding of the organic light, is a sine qua non. That is to say, it is an absolute requisite of that kind of knowing. The correct practice for such an investigation is telestic shamanism. So, for instance, you could pose the question, what caused the first laboratory planetary experiment of the Anthropos genome to crash? What caused Anthropos 1 to crash? Show me what caused Anthropos 1 to crash. Show me how Anthropos 1 crashed. And reveal the conditions of the planetary setting where that happened. Okay? Those are approaches to a telestic question. You could formulate such a question about any one of those 9 experiments, and then you could hone it until you get the syntax vivid and clear. Then you call upon the genial support of a psychoactive plant species to reach a state of heightened awareness. And then when you were in that state, perhaps in the presence of the organic light, if you're able to reach that level of attention, then you pose the question that you have formulated before entering the trance. As far as I know, this is the only way to find out what happened in these 9 previous experiments. Now you might ask, well, why don't I go and do that, since I, of all people involved in this experiment, have probably the optimum conditions for such an investigation? There are 2 reasons why I haven't done that. The first is because I'm pursuing other questions, and they are so massive that I don't really have the mental capacity to take on enormous cosmic propositions such as would be involved in investigating those 9 crashed experiments. I need to advise you, some of you who in future may undertake such investigations, that if you do it correctly, you always get far, far more intel than you can handle. And to pursue telestic investigations of that kind requires a long debriefing period. And it's difficult to do on your own. In fact, it's next to impossible. What we're talking about here are investigations in the telestic practice of shamanism that were undertaken by adepts in the mysteries, okay? But they did it in teams of 4 and 8 and 16 people. They had to do it in teams because the intel comes in such massive abundance and the intel is so powerful and mind-boggling and earth-shaking that you cannot assimilate and integrate that intel all by yourself. So one of the reasons why I don't make these investigations is because my conditions do not provide me with a team for debriefing. Currently, I only have one apprentice. Now, I had the occasion at the beginning of October to go be on Infinity Ridge with another shaman of high accomplishment. Not my apprentice, Kundry, but another highly trained shaman coming from the indigenous practices of South America and many other countries, including North Dakota, Bhutan, Gabon, Africa, and very far-reaching parts of the world. So in the company of another shaman on Infinity Ridge, I'm able to handle things that I couldn't handle, that I wouldn't want to handle alone. I can handle them alone, but I don't want to handle them alone because it's not productive. Because what happens if I handle them alone, as I did for many years, is that I accumulate all this intel and I have no one to impart it to. And I can't work through it properly. I can't process the intel. The intel has to be processed. So it would be a massive job to undertake even one investigation of one of these Avatar of Vishnu catastrophes. I haven't done that. And as I said, I am currently involved in other investigations, which, I assure you, require the complete capacity that I have as a Nahual. I'm booked in that respect. Now, getting back to the course correction, due to these conditions, it is not feasible at this time to investigate why the 9 previous experiences crashed. So let's let it go. And I'm asking you to make the correction to release that from your thinking and not let it hold you in a orientation toward the narrative. We don't need to know that. All we need to do is know what's happening in this one. When we work that out, we can then perhaps have the liberty and the privilege to go back and investigate why the other 9 experiments failed. But right now, it's not relevant. We know that in the current experiment, the Anthropos has turned massively against its environment. Now, I have to tell you that a lot of the reason for that is due to the Archons. And the triumph of the Archons is AI, artificial intelligence, and IT, informational technology. Now you can look at the triumph of the Archons, or the consummation of the work of the Archons, as having been accomplished at two levels. The first level, this is a very simplified picture, folks, but the first level was the intrusion of the Archonic virus, the salvationist and messianic virus, which contains the pathology of the master race syndrome. So the intrusion or injection of that virus into humanity via a small tribe of Semitic peoples about 2,000 years ago was the first great triumph of the Archons, the first great interception and intervention into this experiment. And as you know, that religious ideological virus is very anti-woman, anti-sex, and anti-earth. And so through those Abrahamic religions, generations and generations of human animals have been programmed out of their living connection with the earth and programmed away from Sophia, away from the divinity of the earth, away from material immanence, and therefore away from any possible knowledge of how this experiment actually works. But that's not really the cherry on the cake as far as the Archons are concerned. That's just the icing on the cake. Abrahamic religion, in its increasingly viral mutations from Judaism to Christianity to Islam, which is the terminal mutation, is the icing on the cake for the Archons. So what's the cherry on the cake? Cherry on the cake is very recent. The cherry on the cake can be seen by just looking at what happened in my lifetime. Now I was talking to Jill today as we were driving down to the coast. And I said, you know, it's a remarkable thing to have lived my lifetime and yours as well, Jill, because she's like 10 years younger than me. Because in my lifetime, since 1945, I've seen something coming. And those of you who are in the same time frame with me, or even a little younger, have also seen it coming. But anyone who is under 40, and especially anyone who is under 30, never got the chance to see it coming, did they? They're born right into it. And imagine human animals who are 6, 8, and 10 years old today, who are born into the technology of wireless telephones, and who are born into a world where there are iPads everywhere they go, and iPhones, and have never known a world where that did not exist. So I was saying to Jill, it's really remarkable to have been born at the moment that I was born, beginning in the first generation of the nine generations of Kali Yuga, 1945 to 2216. Why is it so remarkable? Because I can remember when none of this crap existed and life was just fine. And the triumph of the Archons has unfolded in front of my eyes during my lifetime and that of you as well, who are my contemporaries. And this is all I can say about it. No matter what is the ultimate success of this experiment on human terms or aeonic terms, and no matter what analysis you make of why the experiment is failing, one thing is absolutely certain, that AI is not the DOS of this experiment. The data operating system of the human experiment on this planet is not AI. Human activities in every area of life social, financial, the government of nations, education, medicine, the arts and entertainment, the sciences, the life sciences, none of it is meant to be run on AI. None of it can be run on computers. MS-DOS is not the operating system of the divine experiment of the Aeon Sophia. And so as long as human animals are running their personal, social, and planetary agendas on MS-DOS, that is to say, the data operating system of the Archons, it cannot work. Nothing can work if we run it on computers, except in extremely limited cases. Computers can be used to make lists and catalog things, for instance, in libraries. They're great for list making and cataloging. They can also be used, if you wish, to make reservations and for certain communications functions so that we can have a planetary communication system. Like right now, I'm using a computer to record on GarageBand, or I talk to people on Skype. So they can be used for list making, for fundamental activities of communication, and that's it. The fact that human beings use computers to run every aspect of their life, from the banal and ridiculous narcissistic details of Facebook, all the way up to the human genome problem, human genome program, and space programs by NASA, explains why we are insane. We are terminally insane because we are running our behavior on a data operating system that is not designed for this experiment, but is artificially supplied to the experiment by an alien intelligence. And one thing is certain to me now, is that only human beings who use AI extremely selectively and for a very limited number of activities are going to have any chance to be sane and live in a sane world in the future. Because AI destroys human intelligence. It doesn't just substitute for it, it destroys it. And that is the aim of the Archons, if you can say that they have a name. They don't really intend to destroy human experience any more than a bunch of locusts would intend to destroy your garden. They're not doing it deliberately. They're doing it because that's what locusts do, and they enjoy it. The Archons put the cherry on the cake from the 1970s onward. That is to say, for 40 years now, they have been erecting the capstone of the cherry on this cake. By making it so that human beings are tempted to direct and organize every aspect of their life on a data operating system that's completely alien to this experiment. So what is the DOS that is native to this experiment? Well, Kundry and I were talking about that in the car today as well. So I'm going to introduce a new word for you. It's not a new word, but I'm going to introduce a word into the syntax of the GNE. That tells you in just one word what is the operating system that Sophia intends for human animals to use to run their affairs. Rationality. It's just being rational. And one thing that I find about life, and I've observed this for many years now, is that people are not rational. Now, I'm rational. I'm extremely rational, and I'm consistently rational. But I can become irrational. What happens when I become irrational? Well, I just have a breakdown, you know? Like, for instance, if there's a problem with the car, there was a problem with the VW Golf that I drive a couple of months ago when the muffler fell off. And I became irrational and had a screaming hysterical fit. So I can become irrational when I am overwhelmed. I can become irrational when I am thrown into cognitive dissonance and made schizophrenic by lies and confusion that are deliberately perpetrated in this world. But most of the time I'm rational. But I have to tell you, I rarely meet people who are. Reich observed this many years ago. He observed it already in the 1930s and in the 1940s during the Second World War. He observed that human animals were losing their capacity to be rational. And he called that condition the emotional plague. The emotional plague is irrationality. So people can't reason in simple and consistent way about the most elementary of things. If you listen, for instance, to a discussion on the internet about the problems of Islam, which is a very great problem because Islam is the third and terminal mutation of the archonic virus, and it's the one that kills the host. So Muslims are like a plague of locusts upon this earth. Insofar as they carry that ideology, insofar as they're just human animals like you and me, I have no quarrel with them. But unfortunately, those human animals who call themselves Muslims are deeply infected with an ideological virus that has actually killed them, and that causes them to kill and ravage everything they encounter. When I say that it has killed them because the archonic virus in its third mutation kills the host, what I mean is that Muslims are spiritually dead. They have no spiritual life, and their capacity to love, which is an ability innate to the human animal, is either severely handicapped or else completely lacking. So insofar as they have been attacked by the very virus they carry to its terminal stage, they have been spiritually and morally annihilated. And that's why Islam is so dangerous. Now, to get back to the problem of irrationality, go and listen to any number of discussions on the internet with Muslims who are carrying the Islamic ideology from the Quran. And first of all, listen to how they expound the ideology of their belief system, and then listen to how they debate that ideology with other people. And you will find that there is a total and complete lack of rationality. The arguments to legitimate Islam, first of all, Islam is an insane belief system. And it's violent and socially evil at core. The fact that many Muslims don't enact that behavior doesn't mean that what I just said is not so. It simply means that the infection of Islam in those human animals is not at a critical or terminal stage. So in fact, they live with the horrific ideology of Islam without acting it out. Their humanity still prevails, but not by much, as far as I can tell. So if you just take one example, the debate over Islam It's hard to find anybody on any side of the debate making a rational statement. And certainly those who defend Islam do not speak rationally as sane human animals. But the same thing can be said for transhumanism. Go and look at the arguments for transhumanism and listen to the proponents of transhumanism talk about how not that humanity could merge with archonic intelligence, or that it might, or that we ought to consider it, but that it will and it must. To say that it will and it must is already irrational. Can you see that? To say that humanity will and must become robotized and mutate into a hybrid cybernetic species is irrational, because a rational person doesn't say that just because something is possible, it has to be done. That's not a rational statement. Rationality always considers what might be done, what can be done. There is a complete rationality in almost every sphere of human activity. And why is that? It's because for the last 40 years, human animals have run their lives on a data operating system that is alien to human nature. And this is the consummation of the work of the Archons. And it is irreversible in the case of vast numbers of human animals on this planet. So, now let's go back to the correction that the NAV has made. It's a course correction for the NAV and a course correction for those in the GNE. Do not be concerned about how the previous 9 anthropic experiments on other planetary settings developed and why they failed. Put that question away. Store it away and forget about it. Now turn to the present experiment and turn to the critical and catastrophic moment in which we live. And I ask you to hold in your minds with explicit clarity and explicit ferocity the proposition that I am stating, which is that rationality is the data operating system compatible with the true intelligence of the human animal. Love is rational. Love makes you rational. When you love something and someone, the very act of loving increases and hones and refines your rationality. Now, that doesn't mean that love cannot be passionate. It can be wild. It is wild. It's a fantastic, maniacal, demonic energy. But in the celebrations of that demonic energy of love, whether they be sexual or amatory or creative or social, such as in social love, such as in agape, all those celebrations of love, those emotional eruptions of the energy of love, are directed by rationality, because love is rational. And truly loving people are rational. And by the inverse proposition, people who are not rational cannot be loving. It may seem that I'm targeting Muslims for a particularly harsh treatment, but let me tell you this. I seriously question whether any human animal who defines their identity and behavior according to the ideology of Islam is actually capable of love. They're certainly not capable of rationality. Go read the Quran. If you can find 4 lines in the Quran that are rational, I'd like to know what they are. The first line of the Quran is, "This book shall not be questioned." That in itself is a statement of defiance against rationality, because rationality involves the art and practice of questioning options. Look at the world today. Technology produces all kinds of options, doesn't it? But do people question these options? Do people question whether, for instance, shortwave radio technology should be in schoolrooms? So some people are questioning it now, by the way. That's rationality. But the irrational behavior goes like this. Oh, yes, we invented this shortwave radio technology, and now we have to use it because we invented it. That's irrationality. And we have to use it in every way we can. That's irrationality. So rationality is a component of love. They are synergetic and complementary capacities of the human animal. This experiment is meant to be run on rational terms. And the success of the experiment depends upon how we can do that. I think certainly Wilhelm Reich was outstanding in his view of this, you know. And Reich said, you know, he had a kind of motto that love and work regulate our lives. So he included in love the factor of rationality, and he included in work the factor of responsibility. So that is to say that human animals are herd animals and we are social animals. So anything that a human animal does carries a responsibility toward the social order. That's what Reich meant by work. Your work is not just something you do to earn a living, to have privilege, and to buy things and consume. According to Reich's conception, work is finding your proper place in the synergy of human society. Work always must entail a factor of mutual aid. And so work and love were balanced in Reich's vision. Reich understood how this experiment is supposed to operate and how it's supposed to succeed. So what we have to do now is disregard what may have happened in the 9 previous experiments and concentrate on the fact that unless there is a major divorcement from IT and AI, one person at a time, there is no way to get back to how this experiment is intended to be run. You cannot run your lives on AI. Period. Now, to complete my course correction, I want to go back to the subject of pleromic relay. At the time that I introduced the material of the 9 avatars of Vishnu, I was also talking about pleromic relay, you remember. That part of the scenario, that part of the expansion and elaboration of FGS2 or FGS3, whatever it was, still stands. Pleromic relay was established in September of 2012. The Aeon Sophia does need pleromic relay. And so that part, which is being added to the Sophianic narrative as the G&E proceeds remains valid. And that part becomes even more and more important as we come to the conclusion of these 4 years. You know, someone asked me recently in an email, well, why does she need pleromic relay? I have indicated at other times that the aeons in the pleroma, which is the galactic core, are able, by various means of remote sensing or whatever, are able to observe experiments in planetary laboratories in granular detail. So why does Sophia need pleromic relay? I like to refer to the analogy of a scientific project like the Eden Project, which is a project that is conducted under these large geodesic domes. So imagine that there is one large geodesic dome, and inside this dome, a habitat has been created, and certain species have been introduced into the habitat. And that on the somewhere located on this dome is an observation booth. Let's say that it's not inside the dome, it's outside the dome, but it has a large picture window looking into the dome. So those scientists who set up the dome and place these species in an environment within the dome are not inside the dome. They are not in the experiment. They are in the observation booth looking through the big window into the dome. And they have the capacity through various instruments or whatever, or maybe they use remote viewing. Maybe they are psychically gifted scientists who can use remote viewing to go into the experiment without physically entering the dome. Whatever the case, the scientists who inaugurated the experiment are able to observe it in granular detail. But then imagine that there is a mechanism like a trap door or a passageway that allows the scientists who create the experiment to actually enter the dome. This is what Sophia did. She went through that door, through that entry passage, and she is now inside the dome in the experiment. However, you have to imagine that when she entered the experiment, that is to say, when she morphed into the planet Earth and became the setting for the experiment with Anthropos 10, she lost contact with the other scientists in the observation booth. And the reason why she needed pleromic relay to be established was that so that she could again be in direct two-way radio contact, if you will, with the other aeons, and particularly with Thelete, who was the co-designer of the Anthropos genome. So that is why she needs relay. The pleromic aeons also need the relay so that they can download and upload directly to the Earth, which they cannot do without that relay device that operates through the spindle of the Pleiades. So, although they could have observed the Aeon Sophia for many countless millions of years, and they have observed the experience in granular detail, and on one unique instance, they actually performed an intervention of an Aeon into the experiment, the Christos intercession, that was only a temporary intervention. The Christos aeon did not remain in the burgeoning biosphere, but merely entered the biosphere to make certain adjustments that would make the plethora of life programs more manageable to the aeon Sophia, and then departed. So, insofar as this scenario is evolving and developing, The episode of pleuromic relay remains intact. But we really need to concentrate in the remaining 5 months on why the experiment is going wrong and what to do about AI, and to realize the true nature of AI. As I said, it's remarkable that in the short lifetime of one human animal, that the timing of that lifetime would be such that it has allowed myself and others to see this coming. We can remember when it wasn't here. When I was in my 20s, and even in my early 30s, people were not running their lives on computers and iPods and iPhones. And the time to live without doing that is coming again. It needs to come. It is essential to return to the way this experiment was intended to be run. That is to say, to operate human behaviors personally, socially, and globally on the DOS of rationality conducted through language, conducted through sane and rational communication, and not to run it on AI. And to the extent that it continues to run on AI, everything that runs on AI is bound to self-destruct. So on that note, I'm going to conclude this rather bizarre and disjointed briefing. I had to get back at some moment, but I'm not quite back into the rhythm of things yet, so we'll see what I can come up with next and what I can do to update you and bring you up to speed in where the GNE is going in these last 5 months until the conclusion in March of 2014.